This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. For those who might like to call in after the break, the number is 717-300-1698. 717-300-1698. I don't know what's going on with this country, but it seems to me to be falling apart. I mean, here's the latest brainstorm of which I've just been made aware, namely that Mark Zuckerberg, who is the creator of Facebook, who is one of the world's wealthiest men because of that, is going to start labeling stories as fake news or not. And I ask myself, well, what in God's name qualifies him to do that? He was a rich kid. He was raised rich, went to Phillips Exeter. When I was at Princeton, there were many of my classmates who went to prep schools like Phillips Exeter. I myself had graduated from South Pasadena High School, in the first class of Princeton that had as many public high school graduates as college. You think this guy's some kind of wizard, some kind of Einstein? No, he went to Harvard, but he dropped out his sophomore year. Mark Zuckerberg was making so much money off of Facebook, which he and some of his classmates contrived as undergraduates, that he dropped out. So what in God's name qualifies this guy to tell whether something is true or false, fake or real? I bet if I asked him 20 questions, I'd find he's an ignoramus about, for example, the assassination of JFK. He probably thinks that Lee Harvey Oswald did it. That's a popular view. It just happens to be false. Or maybe about 9/11. I wouldn't be surprised if he subscribed to the proposition that 19 Islamic terrorists brought about the atrocities of 9/11. I'm certain he does not know that none of the official 9/11 planes actually crashed on 9/11. I'm sure he doesn't know that none of the passengers who were aboard any of those planes died in crashes that did not take place. I'm sure he doesn't know that those alleged Islamic terrorists, therefore, did not commandeer the planes and cause them to crash, which means that the entire war on terror is based upon a false beliefs, false propositions, a fantasy, fake news. We've heard nothing but fake news from the CIA about the death of John F. Kennedy and from our own government. The Warren Commission, a monument to fake news. Completely ridiculous. Lee Oswald was framed. He wasn't even a shooter. We've been able to establish that he was standing in the doorway of the book depository while the motorcade went past, that he in a famous photograph taken by AP photographer James Ike Alchins, that Harold Weisberg, who published a whole series called Whitewash about how the Warren Commission really had covered up rather than revealed what had happened, that Jim Garrison himself was convinced that Lee Oswald was in the doorway, couldn't have done it. He not only cannot have been the lone demented shooter, he cannot have lone demented gunman, he can't have been one of the shooters. So what in Christ's name is Mark Zuckerberg going to do if he confronts a story that says Lee Oswald was innocent of the assassination of JFK? Mark it fake news? I mean, this is a simple absurdity. I mean, we're in a world that is turned upside down. The United States is becoming a meaningless house of cards, a reflection of its former self that makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, look at the situation here with all these claims about Russia having hacked our election. This began with a story in the Washington Post on November 24th, where the Washington Post was bought by Jeff Bezos, another of these rich kids who doesn't know his a-hole from his elbow. A story citing the anonymous group Proper Not, P-R-O-P, capital O-R, capital N-O-T. A story that accused the Russians of building a large propaganda operation that worked to defeat Hillary Clinton and elect Donald Trump, implying that Donald was assisted by the Russians because they wanted him in to be a patsy, a puppet of Vladimir Putin. I mean, this is so ridiculous beyond belief. The alternative, the regular media crashed on 8 November when the election took place. The regular media, the mainstream media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Chicago Trib, LA Times was a bit of exception. But most of the papers and the networks were all telling us again and again and again that Hillary Clinton was a sure thing, that she was going to win, that the odds were simply overwhelming, that Donald Trump didn't even have a chance. And they were supporting that with polls that were rigged. They deliberately oversampled Democrats, women, and liberals in order to support a predetermined conclusion. CNN was caught doing it several times. We had a memo from to the director of the Monmouth University poll specifying that it was important to do that because Hillary was in such bad shape that they had like 52 campaign offices in Florida and they couldn't find anyone to staff them, that they needed to pad the polls to benefit Hillary. Well, what could be more fake news than that? And the whole thing came crashing down on the 8th of November when Hillary lost. The candidate who wasn't supposed to lose lost. The candidate the media had gone all out for lost. The whole facade of the media and its credibility was destroyed by the results of the election of 2016. And we know not only now are they trying to explain away their failure by claiming that the election was affected by fake news, but they're making it up. They're making it up. There was no Russian hacking of the campaign. Rance Priebus was on Meet the Press this Sunday with Chuck Todd. And Chuck Todd kept saying, repeatedly insisting, that the proof that the Russians had hacked the election was that they'd hacked both the RNC and the DNC, but they only put up the DNC material. And Rance Priebus had to tell him three times the RNC was not hacked. The RNC was not hacked. The RNC was not hacked before Chuck Todd began to get a handle on it. Not only that, but we know that the vote wasn't affected in the United States. We did a recount thanks to Jill Stein. I thought it was a really ridiculous thing to do. Now I'm glad we did it. Because in Wisconsin, we found there was a net difference after it was all said and done, went back, recounted every vote, that Donald Trump picked up an extra 131 votes. No hacking, no manipulation. He won Wisconsin. Michigan, if anything, is even more interesting because the Michigan recount revealed massive voter fraud for Hillary Clinton, not for Donald Trump, for Hillary Clinton, where precincts that voted 95% for Hillary were found to have vast numbers of ballots added after the polls closed. Excuse me. I'll repeat that. The Michigan recount revealed massive voter fraud by Hillary Clinton, precincts that voted 95% for Hillary were found to have vast numbers of ballots added after the polls closed. Now that's real news. That's not fake news. Get this. In addition, in Detroit, which also voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton, almost two-thirds of the precincts did not match those of the voting machine printout reports. That means more than half of the votes for Hillary could be fraudulent. According to state law, precincts whose poll books don't match with ballots indicating fraud can't be recounted. If that happens, the original election results stand. That's real news. In Pennsylvania, they couldn't do the recount because they have so many machines that are touchscreen machines that do not leave a paper trail. So if you were, you know, running for office in Pennsylvania and you felt you'd been cheated and wanted a recount, they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it, in my opinion, on its face. That means touchscreen machines are unconstitutional. Now, that's newsworthy of publication, but you won't read that in the mainstream media. All you get is fake reports. They even had fake exit polls. They were so certain that the rigging for Hillary was going to win the election, just as they had predicted, that they even padded exit polls in order to make sure that they would converge with what was expected to be the results of the count. But the turnout for Trump was simply overwhelming. Even their best efforts to hack it were unavailing. Now that's real news. I presented it here on the 1st of December by featuring Richard Charnin, a brilliant statistician who's also an expert on the theft of elections using electronic voting machines. Richard has published two books on that very subject. You can find them on Amazon.com. A new book about how the Democratic Party sabotaged the election of Bernie Sanders and deprived him of state after state after state. You know what's ironic about all this is that Bernie, even in the polling that was being conducted during the campaign that appears to have been accurate polling, showed that Bernie ran much better against Donald than Hillary. Richard Charnin explained on that show, and I must say, if you're just going to listen to one of my shows from this year, that's the one to listen to, 1 December 2016, that he actually believed that Trump had won 7 more states that were given to Hillary, including New Hampshire, Colorado, and Nevada. In fact, Richard is so good at this, he is the only expert in the country who predicted the electoral votes that would be obtained by Barack Obama in 2008, the electoral votes that would be obtained by Barack Obama in 2012, and the electoral votes that would be acquired by Donald Trump in 2016. Now, there's nothing phony about that. Hillary was a terrible candidate. Even before the vote, Michael Moore was pointing out that he thought Trump would win. And his explanation was that there was a series of Rust Belt states, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, that had been severely damaged by the Trans-Pacific, by the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. Guess who brought us NAFTA? Surprise, surprise. Bill Clinton. NAFTA has gutted the manufacturing and industrial base of the United States. You may remember a debate where Russ Perot participated and said if NAFTA were implemented, that giant sucking sound was all those jobs going south. Well, Russ Perot tried to warn us. Hillary was cheerleading. Hillary wanted the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which has been described as NAFTA on steroids. She faked because of Bernie's opposition to the TPP, pretending that she was opposed to it too, but in some of her speeches to banks for these fantastic sums of money, $225,000 a speech. Bernie said those must be some speeches. She acknowledged that she has a public and a private position, and of course the public position is for the masses to consume. She's clearly an elitist who believes that the elite are entitled to lie to the masses. Just lie, lie, lie. It was a philosopher at the University of Chicago who promoted this philosophy and was the godfather of the neoconservatives who would, you know, bring us 9/11. What would Mark Zuckerberg think about 9/11? I mean, this is ridiculous. How can he fake a story? How can he claim a story is fake news if he doesn't know the truth? The guy didn't even graduate from college, for God's sake. He's very good at computers. He's very clever. He figured out a product, namely Facebook, that a lot of people love. I have a Facebook page. I'm all for Facebook. But that doesn't make the guy an Einstein. He isn't. I mean, I'm willing to guess he has above average intelligence, but he doesn't have the kind of background that would be appropriate. Look, how many areas, how many subjects do you think Mark Zuckerberg would be sufficiently expert to even begin to guess whether a story is true or is fake? When we start talking about JFK, when we start talking about 9/11, well, we're talking about two of the most humongous stories of our time. And I can guarantee you Mark Zuckerberg doesn't have a clue. So given that I have done a huge amount of collaborative research on JFK, a huge amount of collaborative research on 9/11, not to mention all my collaborative research on Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, the Orlando, Dallas, the moon landing. I mean, for God's sake, what qualifications does Mark Zuckerberg have to make pronouncements about any of those? Any of those? Is he just automatically and reflexively going to endorse the official account? In other words, is he going to declare to be real news, fake news, provably fake news? Is he going to endorse that JFK was assassinated by Lee Oswald firing three shots from the 6-4 of the book depository? I mean, what in God's name is going to be his position on any of this? What about the Iran deal? What does he know about the Iran deal? Is he aware that all 16 U.S. intel agencies already in 2007 declared that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons, a conclusion they reaffirmed in 2011? What does Mark Zuckerberg know about Iran? He doesn't know a goddamn thing. I mean, it's insulting that he's appointing himself to be the arbiter of truth and falsity, a guy who didn't even graduate from college but became fabulously wealthy. There's something about people who get lucky and become very wealthy that makes them think they're superior intellectually to the rest of the world. Well, it's ridiculous. It's completely false that Mark Zuckerberg would even propose that he should be determining which stories are real and which stories are fake when he has no idea, no background, no experience, no education, no specialization. Look, the guy's good at computer programming. He can probably spot fake stories about computer programming from a mile away. But that doesn't qualify him with regard to JFK, 9/11, Wellstone, on which I've also done a lot of work, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing. I mean, what in God's name does he know? Has he read any of my books about these subjects? One of my great strengths is that I know what I do not know. So when I engage in research on any of these subjects, I bring in experts on those areas where I am not myself an expert. In relation to my first collection of expert studies on JFK, for example, I brought in a world authority on the human brain who is also an expert on wound ballistics, Bob Livingston, MD. Sensational guy. Because of his background and training, he looked at the diagrams and photographs in the National Archives that purport to be diagrams and photographs of the brain of JFK, and he was able to determine with no hesitation that those diagrams and photographs could not possibly be of the brain of JFK. What would Mark Zuckerberg think? How would Mark Zuckerberg even be remotely qualified to make a judgment? Bob Livingston was well familiar with a testimony from the Parkland physicians, and he got six or eight of them all testifying that JFK had a fist-sized hole in the back of his head, through which cerebral and cerebellar tissue was extruding. Does Mark Zuckerberg know the difference? Now, the reason Bob was so able to discern that what we have in the archives are not photographs or diagrams of JFK's brain is because, among other features, the brain was intact virtually completely. It was a larger brain than normal by about 100 grams, and that it had an intact cerebellum. Well, you can't have a fist-sized hole in the back of your head and have cerebellar tissue extruding and also have an intact cerebellum. I also brought, you know, collaborated with a guy who's got a PhD in physics, who's also an MD, who's board certified in radiation oncology, which is a treatment of cancer using X-ray therapy. So he's an expert on the interpretation of X-rays. David W. Mantic. He went into the National Archives for the first time in late 1992, telling me he thought that he would be able to establish that there was a second shot to the head and that the autopsy X-rays had been altered. He was able to establish both. How would Mark Zuckerberg have any idea which end is up with questions regarding the X-rays of JFK and whether they're authentic or not? The Warren Commission advanced the altered X-rays to discount the testimony of witnesses who saw his brains blown out the back of his head. They said, no, it can't be because we have the X-rays and there's no hole in the back of the head, because they patched the hole in the back of the head. I mean, this is stupid beyond belief. Who the hell is Mark Zuckerberg to think he can label stories fake or not? I'm telling you. Because we've got nothing here in relation to this Russian hacking, but fake stories, one fake story after another, including that we know the guy who released the DNC emails to WikiLeaks wasn't Russian. He was a U.S. intel op, whom I suspect was collaborating with Seth Rich, the DNC IT guy. More when we return.
Do you struggle with your weight? Are you frustrated or discouraged? Think you've tried everything to lose weight? Tired of weight loss products that promise results and don't deliver? There are 12 main reasons why you struggle with excess weight and have a difficult time losing it. From overeating to hormonal imbalances and underactive thyroid, even sleep problems, and even dieting itself. The truth is, the 12 causes of weight loss problems are all addressed by one product, Royal Velvet. You, yes you, can join the scores of Rinse listeners who have stopped the madness and no longer struggle with weight issues. Maybe you've heard them talk with Jeff about their amazing transformations on his show. Simply go to RoyalVelvetNow.com, click on the weight loss section, and learn the truth about the real reason obesity is a deadly epidemic that you can avoid. Then click on the Rinse icon in the upper right-hand corner, and you will be on your way to a healthier, slimmer, more youthful you. RoyalVelvetNow.com. Your life will never be the same.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio Superfood. I've taken Bio Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. We actually know what's going on here. We know that the establishment on the left and on the right, which fought Donald Trump tooth and nail throughout this campaign, are petrified that if Trump is inaugurated, that there are going to be transformations in the government that are going to harm their position with regard to making money. You know, with regard to these corporations, anything that cuts down on their profit margin is objectionable. In the case of Fidel Castro, he was a communist because he appropriated the property that had been held by Anaconda/Copter and by United Fruit. Castro believed that the resources of Cuba should be used to benefit the Cuban people. The same was true of Salvador Allende in Chile, Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. I mean, these were people who wanted to benefit the people of their country. Donald Trump wants to benefit the people of our country. And let me just make a couple of points before I take the... We have a call waiting. Wayne Madsen, who may be our nation's leading investigative journalist, have figured out what happened. Here's his Wayne Madsen report from December 14, 15. CIA's allegations against Russian election interference, political. Current and former members of the U.S. intelligence community are lambasting Central Intelligence Agency Director John Brennan for waging a political campaign against President-elect Donald Trump based on flimsy intelligence that the CIA director claims ties Russia to interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Brennan's secret report on the alleged election interference has been questioned as fuzzy and as inconclusive by U.S. intelligence and law enforcement officials, including Director of National Intelligence James Clapper and FBI Director James Comey. The pro-Saudi Brennan, who according to former FBI agent John Guandolo is a secret convert to Wahhabi radical Islam, continues to proffer the notion that Russia selected Trump as president. Brennan's gambit is designed to convince enough electors to vote against Trump on December 19th when the Electoral College meets in the 50 state capitals. If Trump is denied the 270 Electoral College votes required to become president, the election will be thrown into the House of Representatives and the Senate. The House would vote for the president, with each state entitled to one vote, while the Senate would vote for the vice president, with each senator having one vote. It is through this constitutional but rarely invoked process that Brennan and his allies within the CIA seek to select the next president. And the beat goes on in the Wisconsin State Journal today. I was astonished in the front section, a full-page ad, esteemed electors attacking Donald Trump, cherry-picking, exaggerating, making a one-sided case. You won't find anything there about Hillary Clinton's abuse of her email servers, about the slaughter of Libya, about the corruption of the Clinton Foundation, about the Benghazi fiasco where Chris Stevens, our ambassador, was trying to stop the transfer of shoulder-mounted surface-to-air missiles because they could be used to shoot down civilian airliners, which, by the way, Barack Obama has just authorized that they are now going forward to send those weapons to the rebels in Syria as the Russians and the Syrian army are wiping things up in Aleppo. The effects of this administration's foreign policy have been calamitous, and they have extended the Bush-Cheney foreign policy where they deliberately contrived 9/11. If you have a doubt, I have a whole book about it. In order for the United States to become engaged in endless wars in the Middle East to benefit Israel, Wesley Clark, former Supreme Commander Allied Forces Europe, meaning he was a commanding general of NATO, learned about this when he returned to the Pentagon and had a conversation with another general, first about the plan to invade Iraq, which startled them both because Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. then later about the plan to take out the governments of seven countries in the next 5 years, beginning with Iraq and Libya, ending with Syria and Iran. The United States had no interest in doing this. The United States did not benefit. This was solely for the benefit of Israel, which likes to have the United States perform dirty work on its behalf. I mean, this is completely disgusting. And the war has gone on in Syria as an extension of that foreign policy designed to benefit Israel. In case you missed the memo, Cynthia McKinney revealed not long ago that when new Congress members come to Washington, D.C., they're asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. And those who don't find themselves confronted with an alternative candidate, well-financed next time around, or perhaps that their district has been redrawn so they no longer have a seat. This is the sort of thing we're up against. The Israeli lobby, massive. JFK required its precursor, the World Jewish Congress, to be registered as a foreign agent since his assassination. No president has had the nerve to insist that AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, calls itself Political Affairs Committee, same thing. Most powerful lobby in Washington, D.C. should also be registered, even though it is a foreign agent. It's a lobby for a foreign agent. We tend to forget. We have a call here, Barb from Florida. Barb, welcome to The Raw Deal.
Hi, Dr. Fetcher.
Glad to have you. Glad to have you here, Barb. Speak up.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Fetcher. Yeah, you've touched on so many issues because JFK was the first president I voted for when I was 21, and I was a teacher at the time. And in 63, one of my students on November 22nd came running up to me crying that the president had been shot. And I'll tell you, I never realized till a few years ago that it was a coup d'etat.
Yeah,
and I don't know if you knew Ed Sherry. Ed was a friend of mine, died a couple of years ago. He was part of a group that researched the murder of our president, and he would go to the archives in Washington, D.C. He had a total room in his house totally devoted to all the research on JFK, and he was in the sound business. And when he'd be out of town, the FBI or one of those organizations would be in his house. He knew that they were going into his files. But anyway, what I really called about was in today's Palm Beach Post on the accent section, that's section C, I think, they had the whole front page of Camelot Christmas. Rare photos of JFK and families, their first last Christmas in Palm Beach, and they show, of course, John and Jackie and Carolyn in front of a fireplace with the Christmas stockings, and it really it's a beautiful spread. If anybody can get it online,
well, we wouldn't be in the miserable situation we're in had JFK managed to accomplish the feats he had in mind, including shattering the CIA into 1,000 pieces, including pulling our forces out of Vietnam, including circumventing the Fed. He'd already instructed the Department of the Treasury to print hundreds of millions of United States notes on the ground that it was absurd for the government of the United States to be paying interest to a consortium of private banks for printing the currency of the United States. He would have continued the relentless crackdown on the mafia. He would have cut the oil depletion allowance. He would have not allowed Israel to develop nuclear weapons. It would have been, the world would have been a completely different place. But Lyndon Baines Johnson wanted to be the president of all the people. There was going to be the law enforcement was closing in on him. He was involved in multiple scandals. There was going to be a vote in the Senate on the 22nd of November 1963 in the Bobby Baker scandal, where Bobby was Lyndon's bag man. That was widely expected to tarnish him so badly that Jack wouldn't be able to run with him again. Jack, in fact, had already decided he wasn't going to run with him again. He told Evelyn Lincoln, his personal secretary, he was thinking of Terry Sanford, governor of North Carolina at the time. Richard Nixon, even the morning of the assassination, said he did not think that Jack would run again with Lyndon Johnson. So Lyndon was the primary motivator of the assassination, and it's quite tragic because none of those things happened. Now we have the CIA playing games with the American people, running a complete phony propaganda operation to try to alter the American people's choice to be president of the United States. And you have a host of other powerful entities, including these newspapers that the CIA has infested. I mean, William Colby told us a long time ago, about 20 years, that the agency he then directed owned everyone of significance in the major media. And it was just so glaring to me when, once again, for the second night in a row, Lester Holt, who abdicated his responsibility to the American people by giving the questions for the debate he moderated to Hillary Clinton's campaign manager a week before the debate, had an arrangement with Hillary so when she stroked her face, he would go after Trump and then throw it over to her without asking an intervening question so she could deliver a prepared zinger. Again, tonight was insisting that Vladimir Putin was personally involved in this when there's no evidence of that whatsoever. It's completely absurd. Why would Vladimir Putin be involved? Look, Donald Trump was supposed to have less than a 10% chance of winning. Everyone was guaranteeing that Hillary was going to win. Why would Putin undertake such a high-risk venture? He had no interest in doing it. He didn't do it. All this is a lot of malarkey. This is part of the fake news we're getting from NBC, Lester Holt, Anderson Cooper, Wolf Blitzer. These are people long known to have ties to the CIA. And what William Colby told us then has become much worse today, so that virtually everything you read from the mainstream media that gets repeated over and over is almost guaranteed to be fake news. So if Mark Zuckerberg wants to label the fake news, he can start with the New York Times and the Washington Post and ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, go from there. I mean, it's ridiculous. And now they're trying to crack down on the alternative media so the people who are actually doing the research and can sort out the difference between the true stories and the false stories aren't going to have a chance to say it. That's what's coming now. And Paul Craig Roberts has written a brilliant article about it. And Barb, you're welcome to comment on this article as I go through it, or to comment now. More thoughts in your mind, I'm sure.
Thank you for the book. I just ordered it on the Pulse because I'm right here in Florida. And that was in Orlando, and I certainly want to know all about it.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
I wanted to add that on the front of the American Legion magazine in October 2016, it says, "Your choice," in exclusive interviews, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton debate the top issues. I didn't even open the book, but they were it was a very unflattering picture of Donald Trump. I didn't appreciate it at all, and I'm going to contact the American Legion. I'm a member of the auxiliary, and of course, a previous article, they had one of these, a woman standing in front with all the little junior members of the auxiliary around her, and she was a Holocaust survivor. So you know where they push their agenda if they can get away with it, every place that they possibly can, you know. And I'm in the belly of the beast. I have Deutsch now for my congressman, and they flipped the district, so now I'm going to have Lois Frankel. Can you believe that?
Which Deutsch was this? Wasn't the former director of the CIA?
No, Ted Deutsch.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're in a great fix, Barb.
Yes, I am.
Well,
but You give me faith and hope, I'll tell you that.
I really appreciate your calling in, Barb. Thanks very much. You call again, okay?
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye. So here we have stories that the New York Times, for example, CEO calls for ad networks to ban the alternative media. He wants to call off ad revenue for the alternative media as the next level of attack on the press. Listen to this superb article by Paul Craig Roberts. There is circumstantial evidence that the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the rest of the prostitute media are part of a conspiracy with the oligarchs, the military-industrial, the military-security complex, the Hillary Democrats, the neoconized Republicans to shut down the dissident internet alternative media and to deny Donald Trump the presidency. Consider the brand new website Prop or Not and its fake news list of 200 internet Russian agents. Rents.com, as I'm sure you know, is on that. My very first website, assassinationscience.com, is on it. There's a USS Liberty Survivors website that's on it. Strategic Research is on it. Global Research is on it. VoltaireNet.org is on it. Sputnik News is on it. I mean, all of these are superior to the New York Times, and God knows to Prop or Not, which is itself a complete fake hidden website. Prop or Not is a website hidden behind multiple screens as would be an offshore attack avoidance scheme. In other words, no known responsible entity is behind the site, which has libeled 200 other websites. Or if it is, it is too ashamed of what it is doing to be associated with it publicly. Consider the expertise and money required to shield the identity of an organization, whether tax avoidance or website. That's not something that just anyone can do. This type of Klingon cloaking requires real money or the CIA. As long as it pretends to be a newspaper, the Washington Post is subject to journalistic ethics. But the Prop or Not story by Craig Timberg violated journalistic ethics. Unsupported accusations were leveled against 200 websites, a McCarthyism record. How did a story, which would have been instantly quashed by editors in my day as a Wall Street Journal editor, get past Timberg's editor? That is the question. Here we have the Post committing libel against 200 websites, all of whom can sue for damages. There goes Bezos' billions. Would a Washington Post editor of any intelligence have published such a libel-inviting story unless the owner, Bezos, gave the okay or the order? How can the Washington Post feel secure in such an act of libel? Is it because Bezos is protected by his reported membership on a U.S. government committee, along with a Google CEO, that is believed to conspire against the privacy of the American people? Prop or Not would have amounted to nothing except for the Washington Post. Craig Timberg's story was written as if Prop or Not was the real goods. Yet, Timberg has not revealed who is behind Prop or Not. Add to this picture the hyping by the Washington Post, New York Times, and TV prostitutes of the unattributed CIA charge that Russia hacked the Hillary emails and used them to elect Trump with the help of Russian agent websites. This fake news charge is challenged by WikiLeaks and by a number of experts who ask why unattributed allegations are accepted in place of evidence, and the charge is not supported by the FBI. How do we know that the alleged unattributed CIA charges are actually made by the CIA, or whether there is consensus within the agency? How can the prostitutes, such as the New York Times and Washington Post, give us all these claims without a shred of evidence or any attribution to the CIA officials allegedly reporting the story? What kind of journalism is this? The conspiracy against truth and against President-elect Trump is real. The oligarchs and their prostitutes, rogue elements of the CIA and the neocon establishment, hope to drag alternative media before McCarthyite congressional hearings run by the American hegemonists who want power over the world. Whatever you think of Trump, clearly the oligarchs who rule us fear him. The oligarchs are trying to keep Trump out of the presidency, and they're trying to associate truthful reporting with foreign influence. who wins this war determines the fate of America. Now, it's a completely brilliant article. It's entitled The Conspiracy to Shut Down Truth, Donald Trump and the American People. And I make the point, if it's not already obvious, that what's going on here, these allegations of Russia hacking into affect the election, is a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy theory. And it's a particularly bad one because there's no evidence whatsoever to support it. On the contrary, we know there was no influence on the actual votes that were cast. We know that the RNC wasn't even hacked. We know the DNC was hacked because it led to an endless stream of emails coming through WikiLeaks, where it appears that Seth Rich, who is the IT guy for the DNC, got sick of all of the attacks and sabotage on Bernie Sanders that was intended to guarantee the election of Hillary Clinton, guarantee her to be the nominee, and where they sought to pursue the same techniques against Donald Trump in order to guarantee that Hillary would be the nominee. They rigged the polls. They rigged the exit polls. Richard Charnin saw through it. Go back to my interview with him of December 1st and appreciate the significance of what we're learning. And get this, in case you missed the memo. The elector from California who's leading the effort to block Trump through the Electoral College is the daughter of Nancy Pelosi. Get that. The elector from California who's been calling on the electors to vote against Donald Trump is the daughter of Nancy Pelosi. I mean, how bad is that? How disgusting. Obama has called for an Electoral College intelligence briefing, but what would that be? Look, the CIA has no evidence to substantiate its claims. There's nothing there. It's all propaganda. The FBI does not agree. The Director of National Intelligence does not agree. In fact, they were all supposed to come and testify before Congress, but it's obvious that the divergence in their views was so enormous it was going to be embarrassing to the American intelligence community for those differences in opinion to be displayed in a public forum before the Congress, so they decided not to do it. Podesta's demanding intel on Russia's efforts to get Trump elected. Well, we know that WikiLeaks was shut down after Julian Assange began publishing the Podesta emails that led to the discovery of Pizzagate. And it appears that not only John Podesta and his brother Tony, but Hillary Clinton and a host of other sordid characters were deeply involved in a massive pedophile ring that is now getting an immense amount of attention. And don't be fooled by anyone who tries to trivialize. If someone, here are two litmus tests you can tell whether you're dealing with honest brokers or not. Anyone who promotes a Russian hacking meme is not an honest broker. It did not happen. There is no evidence for it. And anyone who trivializes Pizzagate and seeks to dismiss it as a fantasy is, again, not an honest broker. I have done enough of this. I have seen enough. I've even gone to the Comet Pizza website and made rather startling discoveries that this is not a family-friendly institution. In fact, a colleague of mine in my collaborative research suggested I go there and check out the Friends of Comet Pizza. Mind you, this is supposed to be a family-friendly website. And I went to the Friends of Comet Pizza. Here I'm reading a description you can find on the internet. Comet Ping Pong is a fun, kid-friendly neighborhood pizza restaurant that has outdoor seating, bands, and, of course, ping pong. But then when I went there, under Friends, I found a site called Heavy Breathing. And when I started looking at the images on Heavy Breathing, I became profoundly disturbed because it begins with a naked man crawling on a kind of a carpet made up of the words Heavy Breathing. Then there was a marvelous diagram of a man bent over showing you his anal aperture and his member hanging down. That's very family friendly. Then there was another of two men wrapped as mummies where naked women are kissing them. Then there was another where a woman's legs are spread. Now, her genitalia are not shown, But this is definitely not a family-friendly website, and you've got to get into doing research on this. There's a brilliant article by Joachim Hagopian entitled Pizzagate, Podesta Pedo Perps and Clinton's International Child Sex Trafficking Ring Exposed. You got to find the stories done by Abby Martin on John Podesta and Pizzagate, by Ole Damegaard on John Podesta and Pizzagate. And indeed, we even discover that the New York Times has obfuscated stories, lost stories about pedophilia rings that were uncovered in Norway. Norwegian police arrest 20 men in pedophile network probe Helsinki. Norwegian police say they are investigating a pedophile network suspected to involve at least 51 people. They got rid of it. I did an interview with Jim Rothstein, an NYPD Gold Shield detective who cracked many pedophile rings, and he explained to me about his experiences when I shared some of the information we had from Anthony Weiner's treasure trove about this pedophile ring. He said none of it surprised him. Based on his experience, he estimated 70% of high public figures in the United States are involved in pedophilia. That's why they don't want Trump to get into office. He's going to drain the swamp and them along with it. Jim Fetzer, your host. Thank you for listening.
I've ever seen, all from Trioxy. As many of you know, ozone oxygen is highly effective for many different uses in the home or office place, from purifying the air you breathe to the water you drink. In fact, the city of Los Angeles, among others, uses ozone to purify the drinking water for millions. Uses of ozonated water produced by the Trioxy Pure include washing your hands, disinfecting cuts and infections, brushing your teeth, and even washing and sanitizing fruits and vegetables in the kitchen. Meanwhile, the Trioxy Re-Ion ozone negative ion generator will clean your indoor air of pollen, smoke, odors, mold, bacteria, and viruses.